Now, sometimes it often sounds a little weird to say Happy Memorial Day, or Happy Memorial Day weekend in this case. Ian put it in for George Norrie on Coast to Coast AM, courtesy of all the fine people at Clear Channel Florida. I'm down in Miami, WIOD. Jerry Hester, the assistant program director, getting us up and running. Thank you. Thank you, Ken Charles. And let me say thank you to all of you, too, who are dedicated listeners of Coast to Coast. Some of you on Saturday nights may know a little bit about where we're going here in this first hour, but I wanted to reboot this topic briefly because I think it's taking on new traction, and I want to restate the case for it coming up in just a second, and I'll tell you more about what I mean in a moment. But first, let me just say this is that weekend. We say happy Memorial Day. Memorial Day weekend is kind of somber. It's a time when the living celebrate the sacrifice of the dead. And that, you know, is something which then is, I think, incumbent on all of us to actually do, if only for a moment, the weekend when we reflect upon the sacrifice of the men and women who have died in service to this country. And we hold in our thoughts those who survived war but are still battling to get their original lives back, too. I mean, it's a memorial to those people who have served and lost physical, psychological, emotional injuries to people out there who are among us here of the living, servicemen and women whose bodies are still with us, but whose lives have died, at least in part. They've lost something valuable, and they're being treated. There's help. There's hope. Always in VA hospitals, in, you know, those Fisher houses that serve the men and women, help them get back onto their feet who have lost limbs, people who have suffered traumatic brain injuries, people who are just learning to walk again and be a part of their families. We also say thank you, too, on this weekend to the dedicated medical and mental health professionals out there who are doing God's work and doing all that they can to bring everybody back who can be brought back from that terrible precipice that so many do not survive. So for those out there who come back from war only to become a victim later on of suicide, people who could not overcome their depression, we also think of them too. They are also those who have fallen in battle. It just took a little longer for them, sadly. And then for everybody else out there, those of us who benefit from these freedoms, you know, take a prayerful moment to remember those who have died for us in whole or in part, and think about those that are still struggling to help their friends who have come back from our various theaters of war on this Memorial Day weekend. And let's bring them all back soon, I hope. And there are lots of people out there that are doing very good work to keep American men and servicewomen in our mind. Dale Brown is the author of A Time for Patriots. He's a novelist, but his work focuses a lot in this particular field. And in fact, we'll be talking about Battlefield America coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. Dale Brown live. And we say thank you to Paul Streitz is a former infantry platoon leader with the 82nd Airborne in Vietnam. He wrote a book that I was reflecting on the other day. I was looking at it. The book is perfect for the topic, The Great American College Tuition Ripoff. He has written kind of a financial breakdown, if you will, of how college tuition is being set at a level that is unjustifiable by the return on investment. And that there are a lot of people out here who are suffering from these amazing loans they'll never be able to get out of, which they incurred going to college because they were told that college was going to make the difference between success and failure. In fact, our guest in the first hour, Alan Michael Collins, says this is the student loan scam, the most oppressive debt in U.S. history, and how we can fight back. You'll hear about that next. On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Well, thank you again to George Norrie for giving me the chance to step in tonight. Hope he enjoys a nice Memorial Day weekend. We'll do open lines coming up next hour. Then tomorrow night, again, it's going to be a time for Patriots with Dale Brown, novelist who is writing in various aspects about the battle for America coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. Open lines an hour from now. And I have to go back a couple weeks. We were having this conversation. Somebody wasn't entirely prepared for it. So we really wanted to bring in somebody who knows a little bit more about the subject, because if you've noticed, it's really taking on a life of its own. Various network newscasts, Fox, CNN, everybody's doing stories about the unjustifiable price of college tuition. What is driving college tuition to a point where it's way ahead of general inflation? Is it because everybody who graduates gets such, you know, fabulous work that they can easily repay those loans, and so it's worth the return on investment? Or is there something else going on? And I think that this examination is long overdue, especially for the millions of Americans who are saddled with student loan debt. And that's why we bring in Alan Michael Collins, the author of The Student Loan Scam, for our first hour on Coast to Coast. Good evening, Alan.
Good evening. Thank you, and happy Memorial Day.
And to you, too. This is a topic which I'm surprised has gotten as much attention as it's gotten over the last couple of weeks, although there's nothing new about it. It's not like something happened in Congress or something where there's some investigative hearing about it. It's just almost like people sort of organically, spontaneously across the country said, enough. At the end of a college year of paying about tons of bills, they just said, what is this all about? So, Alan, what is this all about?
Right. And I think you're right. You know, I've been working this issue intensely for the past 6 years or so. And I would have to agree with you. Just over the past month or so, things have really started to break in ways that, frankly, I had been hoping would break years ago. But only now are we starting to see the cracks. And, you know, I don't have any good explanation for why it's happening now. There was one story, and I have to take a little credit for this. We actually broke the story in the Wall Street Journal, I want to say maybe 4 months ago, okay, that credit card debt had been surpassed by student loan debt nationally.
No, I saw that. I saw that piece.
Yeah, that was one. That was one that we actually claimed credit for. And
and who's we in this case, Alan?
Well, it was actually me.
Okay.
I was actually just scratching my head one day, and okay, the G19 reports came out, and I was looking in, and I did some math, and I said, holy cow, we finally surpassed credit cards. And kind of gives you an idea how little of a life I have and how much, probably too much, I think about this issue. But nevertheless, we ended up breaking down the Wall Street Journal, and it really sort of grew legs.
Well, and you've been, I mean, I think the first time I talked to you, had just been featured in a New York Times article, and then I'm sure you've been on various newscasts that I've missed, but I remember catching you once on CNN or something like that. And so I know that you're kind of the go-to guy on this subject. It's just all of a sudden people are starting to pay attention to the idea that college loan debt is oppressive. It's holding back our economy, and it's saddling Americans with something which isn't giving them something that they thought would be so valuable on the other end, which is a college degree. As somebody who holds two of them, I mean, it's not like I'm against formal education, but it is crazy when I'm looking at the prices that we may be paying to get our kids through college in the next couple of years.
Yeah, it's truly amazing. You know, the cost of college has risen at about double the consumer price index, or roughly the rate of inflation, for about 30 years running now, approximately since Richard Nixon and his administration formed what's known as Sallie Mae, it used to be a government-sponsored entity which bought and refinanced, et cetera, student loans across the country. But, you know, something can only increase in price so far until the cost becomes completely unrealistic. And I think that's where we're at now. I mean, when I started looking at this issue, as a nation, we owed about $400 billion in student loan debt. And that was, I mean, back in the day, and that wasn't too long ago, this was like 2005, this was a lot of money. Well, here we are not 5-6 years later, and we are probably, as we speak, crossing the $1 trillion mark in terms of what we owe as a nation in student loans.
On student loans alone?
That's right.
Okay, and so then that begs the question, then, who is behind that system? Other than the colleges, who's profiting from that?
Right. And this is exactly the question that I have thought a long time, and I've looked at the congressional machinations, et cetera, for years, and the conclusion is actually very simple. And very simply, what happened was this. Every couple of years, Congress will decide whether or not to raise the allowable loan limits for federal student loans, and this is the gate through which all the colleges must pass for all intents and purposes. So if Congress doesn't raise these loan limits, then the cost of college remains the same. If Congress raises these loan limits, then obviously the price is very quick to follow. And in fact, what we see is that as soon as Congress raises these loan limits, well, the schools all of a sudden will find every reason they can think of to raise their tuitions to exactly match this raise in the loan limits. So it's really a game. And if you look at it, I mean, the analysis that I use to look at it is very simple. You assume everybody is a pretty bad actor, right? You assume that the colleges are greedy and that they are going to jack their prices at every possible step. You assume that the lenders are corrupt, you know, bastards, if I can say that on the air, and that they are going to pay off every congressman and, you know, do everything that they possibly can to get those loan limits raised. You assume that the students don't know anything and essentially will sign whatever the colleges put in front of them, and that has held true to form up to this point. And you assume that the Department of Education it plays its part as a neutral entity that is actually supposed to be looking out for the public good. And you assume that these sort of, you know, helpers off to the side, these so-called student loan advocacy groups that make a lot of money inside the Beltway and supposedly are there to look out for the interests of the students, will be there to provide accurate and timely information to Congress so that they can make the decision about whether to raise the loan limits or not in a fair manner. Well, what we find is that, unfortunately, and all these what I've said holds true, but for two areas, and that is the area of the student loan advocates and the Department of Education. These two entities failed to play their part in the dynamics of this debate, because what should happen, in fact, what should have happened about 10 years ago or even earlier, is, you know, the schools should have went to Congress and said, oh, we've got to raise the loan limits, we're going broke and we're going to the poorhouse, etc. The lenders say, oh, God, yeah, we can, yeah, they're definitely going to the poorhouse, definitely need to raise the loan limits. Well, what should have happened is Congress, and Congress actually played its part, I hate to say it, but Congress turns to the Department of Education and says, well, okay, what do you think? Should we raise the loan limits? How are defaults doing? How are the students doing? Well, what the Department of Education should have answered was the following. They should have said, no, you should not raise the loan limits, because the default rate is about 1 in 3. It's higher than the default rate of any loan out there, higher than subprime home mortgages, higher than payday loans, right, higher than credit cards, etc. The students are taking on unmanageable amounts of debt, and because this debt is non-dischargeable in bankruptcy, they can't get rid of this debt, and it is ruining their lives. No, you should not raise the loan limits.
Right.
That is what should have happened years and years and years ago, but that didn't happen. the Department of Education, instead of saying the default rate is incredibly high, don't raise the loan limits, the Department of Education said, well, according to our cohort default rate metric, and this is a very odd metric, they use it as a stand-in for the default rate, but in fact, it only counts the loans that default in right. the two fiscal years after the fiscal year in which the loan became payable, which I apologize. That's a long way of saying.
That's a long way of saying. Go ahead. Cut that. Boil that down to
it's a
long way of saying
metric.
What?
It's a okay. crappy metric, and it okay. does not measure the true default rate.
And the bottom line is then the reason why tuitions keep going up is because Congress keeps raising the level that a student can borrow. And if
that's
they keep,
right.
if they keep raising that level, then the colleges will follow in behind and raise the tuition to match the new level.
That's right. And the reason they do this is because they aren't told any reason not to. They turn to the Department of Education. The Department of Education essentially lies to the Congress year after year and says, oh, well, the default rate is pretty low. It's like 4% or 5% or 6%. And, you know, I actually went on 60 Minutes in 2005. And it was a great story. Sally May, the government slash private entity that's behind all of this, refused to even show up for the interview. I mean, it was a great story. But the one weakness of that interview was the following. I was asked by Leslie Stahl, well, you know, Alan, you, sounds like you have a beef here, but let's face it, the default rate is low, isn't it? And at the time, I had no clue. I mean, I was only into this issue, you know, not even a year. I had no clue that the true default rate was actually higher than the default rate of any known yeah. lending instrument in this nation.
Right.
I believed what the Department of Education and the lenders and the schools pushed down everybody's throat, which is that the default rate is low. So I had no good answer for that question at the time. But had I known then what I know now, I would have had a question that would have completely stopped this whole process in its tracks, you know, the good, you know, the public doing what the public should, et cetera. And so this is the key failure that happened, and this is the okay. key failure that continues to happen as we speak. The Department of Education refuses to acknowledge that the true default rate is at a level that the public should have been warned for years. The public was completely misled by the Department of Education and also to a lesser extent by these student advocacy groups who should have been screaming Bloody Mary for years and years and years, but weren't.
Okay. So the deal here, and I'm just want to try to encapsulate this if I can, is that
sure.
these student loans, they're guaranteed by the government.
Right.
If you incur them, you can't write them off on bankruptcy.
That's right.
And then it's really like a kind of a giant you just move a bunch of government money from column A into column B into the colleges and universities. And all they have to do is just kind of create the vacuum to fill it up with the money.
That's essentially correct.
Okay.
It is pretty much.
But what about tuition?
This is really easy money for the universities. Very easy money.
Why aren't the tuitions? What are the cost of running a university? Has that not gone up so exponentially? The cost of getting good professors. The cost of building new buildings of housing.
No. The cost of the universities have been on a par with the cost of, you know, Microsoft or any private corporation. Healthcare obviously is an issue, but no
right.
more so at a university than any other line of business. There is no rational justification for the huge increase in cost that the universities have been screaming at and, you know, hold their feet to the fire. And what do they have? They will point to, you know, climbing rock walls and brand new Class A facilities. You know, certainly the the works of Shakespeare and the laws of physics have not changed so drastically in the past 20 years to justify a quintupling of the price of college. It's ridiculous.
Okay. Yeah, and I, as somebody who put himself through both undergrad and then later graduate school, I had a lot more loans for undergrad than I had for graduate. I don't think I took any out for grad school, but I did for undergrad.
Okay.
And it was, I want to say 15 years into my marriage before we were able to pay them off.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a long, long time.
Yeah, well.
We'll get back to this. Hang on a second.
Sure.
We'll be right. We've got more to get to, and we'll even take some calls. And then we'll do open lines coming up, too, and It could be on any topic you want to get to. We just thought we'd jump in again and make this point. The student loan scam, the most oppressive debt in U.S. history, and how we can fight back. And it's the how we can fight back part coming up in just a moment. Plus, if you've been watching the news, you'll see that we're not the only ones talking about this. A very famous million/billionaire is out there actually encouraging people to not go to college. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that coming up. Happy Memorial Day weekend, everybody. Big show coming up tomorrow night, too. A Time for Patriots tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. Happy Memorial Day weekend. Looking forward to your calls. You've got a couple people lined up. You know, American venture capitalists are starting to reconsider the need for college. 33% of the people on the Forbes 400 richest Americans list, 33% didn't finish college. That's a ton. It's not insignificant that they just said, you know what? I've got an idea. I've got a little money. I've got a little muscle. I'm going to go build myself a mountain. And they did. And there's, you know, there's nothing wrong with college. I liked college. I have one kid in college right now. But is the cost of college part of a giant conspiracy? And I say that fully recognizing how that might sound. I mean conspiracy with a capital C, where colleges and universities all across the country know what they could get by on, but also know what they can get until somebody stops them. So how do we stop them? We'll tell you more about that coming up next, and then we'll get to your calls for Alan Collins. You can link up to him through our website at coasttocoastam.com, and then open lines coming up next hour on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Dan, I would do that on the air if you dared me. That's all I'm saying. Don't dare me, dude. A little off-air conversation on Coast to Coast. In for George Norrie tonight. We'll get back to Alan Collins in just a second. Let me remind you of the Thiel Fellowship. I think we mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. Billionaire Peter Thiel started a scholarship program, if you will, without the scholar part. People under the age of 20 can apply for $100,000 fellowships to pursue their ideas as so long as they agree not to go to college during that time. And Alan Collins, you heard me mention that 33% of the Forbes 400 list is comprised of people that never finished a college education. Some of them never even went to college, period. We're talking about the student loan scam, the most oppressive debt in U.S. history, recently passing even credit card debt as the biggest debt category in the United States. But this one's different than credit card debt. Dan, explain that again. I mean, so Alan, explain that just for people to understand. We're talking about the difference between credit card debt and student loan debt.
Yeah, and this is really the key, what I really came here to talk about. You know, there are no consumer protections that we normally, you know, just assume are part of the background when we take out student loans. For example, there are, for all intents and purposes, there are no bankruptcy protections for student loans. There's no statutes of limitations. Truth in lending does not apply to student loans. Fair debt collection practices, you know, all of these things, state usury laws, the ability to refinance the debt in an open market, all of these things that we just assume are there for every other type of debt simply are not with student loans. And this has incredibly important systemic effects on the system. And this sort of brings me around, you know, a point that I wanted to sort of segue into our last segment was the fact that, you know, the Department of Education is actually making money on defaulted student loans. They're not losing money. So the taxpayer does not lose a dime on defaulted student loans. Department of Education actually makes about 22% versus what they pay out for defaulted student loans. And the reason that this is possible is because of the lack of consumer protections. When you take bankruptcy protections away, really horrible things happen, and this could apply to any other type of debt, but it looks like student loans just happen to be the guinea pig.
Right.
When you take bankruptcy protections away, you generate a predatory dynamic where the lender, and in the case of student loans, the guarantor, and even the federal government adopt a vested interest that the students fail, that the loans default rather than remaining in good stead. And so, you know, by way of comparison, think about the subprime home mortgage crisis. If, let's say it turned out that Bank of America and JP Morgan Chase were actually making more money when these subprime home loans defaulted than if they remained in good stead. Well, yeah. There would be people, you know, rioting in the streets, I'm thinking.
Well, right? You're probably right.
Yeah.
But let me ask you, and then we'll get to the calls who are waiting for you. So what can we do to fight back against
the system?
Well, it's very simple.
Congress must return, at least nominally, the basic fundamental consumer protections that they took away. So number one, they have to return bankruptcy protections, because without skin in the game, the Department of Education will continue to lie to Congress, and Congress will continue to jack the loan limits, and we will continue to see this ridiculous inflation that we are all now crying about. And that really is the key core fix that needs to happen. Okay. When that happens, a multitude of the problems that we see, including inflation, will automatically snap to attention. With the Department of Education having skin in the game, and with free and fair bankruptcy protections returned to student loans, we will see the price of college drop dramatically and significantly almost overnight. It won't be quite that magical, but
it is crazy out of control how the prices are going up, and as you point out, no real explanation for why that is other than just they can. Let's go west of the Rockies where Christian is in L.A. on Coast to Coast. Christian, you're talking with Alan Collins.
How you guys doing? I'll make this very quick. I'm a student right now, and I'm not going to a four-year. I'm going to a private college, American Career College, which trains students for different professions in the healthcare industry. I'm on my externship right now. I'm a medical billing student, and I love what I'm doing. But the point is that to pretty much make a long story short, I've pretty much student loans. I have to pay back about $35,433.
Ow.
And, yeah, that's probably going to take 25, 30 years.
This is a two-year degree?
No, it's considered like a two-year degree, but you're actually getting training as in a profession
right.
in the healthcare.
It's what we call an associate's degree of some sort. I'm just saying it's not a four-year degree at $35,000.
Your vocational degree.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to make sure I understand that. That's
painful. It's also one of these. It's kind of like the school I go to. It's a for-profit college. It's not It's like University of Phoenix. There was an article recently, I don't know if you even saw this, in Time magazine, for example. I'm looking at it right now, May 9th, 2011, the May issue of Time magazine. It says, education, the rise in the risk of for-profit colleges. For-profit colleges, and that would be, have been actually getting in a lot of trouble with lying to students. It's insane.
All right, well, let's get our guest on there. Christian, let's go ahead and give... Alan, go ahead, Alan.
The for-profits have largely been in very hot water in the press over the past, I'd say, year and a half. Quite frankly, between you and me and the wall, because short sellers on Wall Street who would like their stock price to go down have decided to launch an all-out assault on for-profit colleges. Now, this is not to say that for-profit colleges don't deserve the negative publicity they're getting. They do. Believe me, they absolutely do. A lot of these colleges have been caught recruiting, homeless people from homeless shelters, 30, 40, 50-year-old men who probably have no use for college, could make no use of whatever education was sort of slapped in their faces. But yet, because of the very lucrative nature of this student loan cash cow, a lot of these for-profit colleges have just turned to the dark side.
Yeah.
And so I think you have to understand that while there is a problem with for-profits, nonprofits are equally, well, let's not say equally, but nearly as bad. A fairly reliable estimate that I use is the Inspector General, which shows an estimated default rate for four-year community colleges and for-profit colleges of 25%, 35%, and 45%, respectively. So while for-profits suck, and they do suck, their default rate is about 45%, according to the study. You know, the nonprofits, the community colleges and the four-year colleges, are not much better. At, sure. at 25 and 35%, you know, this is like the pot calling the kettle black. So
I had a friend who went to broadcasting school at a for-profit college, which had launched right after they changed some of the rules on creating more money for people to get degrees to invigorate the economy, et cetera. And so this was a for-profit broadcasting school that was essentially launched in a double-wide trailer.
Oh, yeah.
And they were talking about how they're going to be building a campus and doing whatever. But really what it came down to, they put about 70 to 100 students through this double-wide trailer, got all this money for each one, and then they closed up. They shut down. You know,
yeah.
They hauled away the double-wide, and that was it. They were gone.
That.
What's that?
They have a habit of doing that. One day they're there, the next day, you know, they fly by the night.
It really was amazing. All right, let's go east of the Rockies. Joey is in Columbus. On Coast to Coast for Alan Collins, author of The Student Loan Scam, The Most Oppressive Debt in U.S. History. Joey? Joey, are you still there in Columbus? Then we move on to Dan in Cleveland on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Dan?
Morning, guys.
Hey.
I was going to touch on the default rate that I've heard and the sort of illegal recruiting that the for-profit schools have done. There's been a number of large stories, one on NPR recently. And the other is I have a relative, for example, about the bankruptcy protection. Mm-hmm. Person was sick at the time, not on their medication for bipolar, and went to school, amassed $30-some thousand in student loans. Person does not work, has no income.
Right.
Yet is in continual forbearance on this loan, and this loan is being held over their head till this day.
Right.
That is
essentially what the student loan scam is. You know, with bankruptcy protections removed, these loans become far more profitable for the companies that make them when they default rather than remaining in good stead. And so, I mean, you get all kinds of examples of people, you know, we have a huge spike in our membership with military people, disabled military vets who are, you know, in some cases even wheelchair bound. You know, any bankruptcy judge looking at this person with regards to any other type of debt would say, yeah, go ahead and, you know, excise it. It's discharged completely. Well, for student loans, that's not the case. Not only are these people on the hook for what they borrowed, which arguably, you know, may or may not be fair, but the loans typically will triple, quadruple, or even worse with penalties and fees.
Mm-hmm.
And so, unfortunately, people like your relative get stuck in the sort of middle. They get hung out to dry. Because you know, the government or the lenders can, you know, hunt people down and steal their inheritance and, you know, and in many cases recoup, you know, quadruple or quintuple the amount that was originally borrowed. For people like was it your niece or your cousin?
It's a relative, but
you know. They simply don't have those resources. And so they sit there and years pass, you know, and they can't get jobs in their fields and their credit record is destroyed and nobody wants to marry them. And it's just a socially horrible epidemic. It truly is a swath of social destruction across this country.
Okay.
I could go on.
Dan, did you have a follow-up thought? Real quickly.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I have talked to a few lawyers, and I've heard that it may be possible, because of the person's illness, to get this actually.
Let me tell you the
fact. They all say it's a massively difficult task.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's go ahead then, Alan, real quick, and then I want to get another caller in before the top of the hour.
Nationwide, only about 200 people per year even attempt to get their loans discharged through bankruptcy because the qualifications to get this done are so stringent. It's just not going to happen. Of these 200 people, The estimate is probably less than, my estimate is less than eight, or let's say eight is my best guess, actually end up getting their loans discharged. This is how impossible a task it is to get student loans discharged in bankruptcy. I advise against trying, because I know people who have ended up half crazy and with FBI agents literally in their yards as a result of really pushing this bankruptcy code.
Okay, let's go to wild card line. Call Lisa in there from Westminster, California, on Coast to Coast before the top of the hour. Lisa?
Yes, I remember hearing from my parents and other older people that financial aid for college used to be mostly scholarships and grants, and maybe you pay it back through your taxes if you prospered, and also maybe you'd work in the cafeteria like 10 hours a week. And now from the financial aid office, it's mostly loans. And you may have to work full time too. Now, why did this change? Is there any way to change it back?
Yeah, that's right. And you know, it really goes back to I don't want to say Richard. Well, it goes back to Richard Nixon, to his administration. There was a time, when indeed about two out of three people who were in college would not have to take loans. They would get grants and scholarships and so forth, work study and so forth. Well, that is completely flipped on its ear now, to where now two out of three people have to take loans. And the average person leaving college now is leaving with, my guess is about $28,000 in student loans. Mm. How you roll it back? Well, number one, you have to return the consumer protections that were taken away from these loans. Right. You have to return them. You have to put them back. You have to make these loans less predatory and less lucrative for both private industry and, quite frankly, for the federal government. Number two, you have to recognize that the cost of college is simply way too high, and you have to exercise the type of government oversight which is necessary to force the colleges to keep their quality high, which is important, but more important, to keep their costs low.
Right.
This is what hasn't happened for the past three decades, and this is what has got to happen.
Well, it's either that or start working on your forward pass or your jump shot. Let's go to Tom in Charleston, Illinois. Is that home of Eastern Illinois University there, Tom? Charleston?
Yes, it is.
Okay, very good. So you'll get the last call in, then we'll go to open lines for the rest of the night. You're talking with Alan Collins. Go ahead.
Yes, I was halfway through my bachelor's degree in psychology up here. Last fall, I was beginning my third semester, and in the middle of October, I had to drop everything and go down to my hometown and spend several weeks with my father. He'd become ill.
Sure.
When I get back, I find out that they have canceled my student loan, and I'm actually in hock for $4,000-some-odd, and they tell me that I cannot reapply for classes until that's paid off. In other words, I'm stuck in a hole with this.
Sure.
Yeah, right now I have upwards to amount of $22,000 in student loans from when I began my associate's degree and everything. And
that's a very common trick that's played. Is they'll find a way to default a loan without the borrower even being warned or hearing or being notified or anything.
Yeah, they didn't tell me they were going to do this.
And I guarantee you that the original loan, that $4,000 they want from you, that original loan was probably $2,625, because that's what the loan limits are for undergrad. I'm betting that was your original loan amount.
Can you call a congressman? I'm really serious. Is there anybody that can intercede on your behalf to go, hey, wait, Eastern Illinois University? You don't mean to do that for this guy. These are extenuating circumstances.
In my experience, Ian, Congress is completely incapable and unable to ever provide any sort of real help for borrowers who get caught in this predatory trap. What they will typically do is send the case over to the Ombudsman Office, the Department of Education Ombudsman Office. And believe it or not, the people that staff this ombudsman office, they actually get their paychecks from a student loan collection company. They are employees of a student loan collection company.
So
do you think that the ombudsman office of the Department of Education is much help to these borrowers? No, they're not.
Well, I'd like to think maybe there'd be some good ones in there. So let's just say everybody should explore every option just in case. But all right, we'll keep tracking this story as it keeps developing, the sort of national pushback to college tuition and the ROI that isn't for students who invest all of this money and end up being saddled with all this debt. Now, the single greatest category of debt in the United States, surpassing credit cards, is college loans. And boy, there is a lesson in that for all of us. I wish we could go back to that time when you could put yourself through school by working in the cafeteria and picking up summer work. We are a long way from that. All right. Thank you so much, Alan Collins. You can link up to him through coasttocoastam.com. When we do open lines, you could pick up that thread if you want, or go entirely new directions. Talking Memorial Day, too, for this weekend. Tomorrow night, it's a time for patriots. Dale Brown, novelist Dale Brown. Love his stuff. You'll be hearing more about it coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett.